Translation by Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. How was the great Emperor Parikshit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee, born in that womb? How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The king of Astinapur, now Delhi, used to be the emperor of the world, at least till the time of the son of Emperor Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother, so he could certainly be saved from an untimely death due to the ill will of the son of a Brahmana. Because the age of Kali began to act just after the assumption of power by Maharaj Parikshit, the first sign of misgivings was exhibited in the cursing of such a greatly intelligent and devoted king as Maharaj Parikshit. The king is the protector of the helpless citizens, and their welfare, peace, and prosperity depend on him. Unfortunately, by the instigation of the fallen age of Kali, an unfortunate Brahmana's son was employed to condemn the innocent Maharaj Parikshit. And so the king had to prepare himself for death within 7 days. Maharaj Parikshit is especially famous as one who is protected by Vishnu. And when he was unduly cursed by a Brahmana's son, he could have invoked the mercy of the Lord to save him. But he did not want to become, he did not want to, because he was a pure devotee. A pure devotee never asks the Lord for any undue favor. Maharaj Parikshit knew that the curse of the Brahmana's son upon him was unjustified, as everyone else knew. But he did not want to counteract it, because he knew also that the age of Kali had begun, and that the first symptom of the age, namely degradation of the highly talented Brahmana community, had also begun. He did not want to interfere with the current of the time, but he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and very properly. Being fortunate, he got at least 7 days to prepare himself to meet death. And so he properly utilized the time in the association of Shukadev Goswami, the great saint and devotee of the Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutan Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Jabanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarine. So the verse again. How was the great emperor Parikshit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee, born in that womb? How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? So this question is being posed by the sages of Naimasharanya to Suta Goswami. Yeah. And the spokesperson for the sages was Shonaka Rishi. Srila Prabhupada intimates in one of the verses, this question was asked, but Shukadev Suta Goswami explained some other pastimes of the Lord about Ashwatthama, Arjuna, Krishna going to Dwaraka, and the prayers of Queen Kunti. But now they're coming back to this question. Because as we know, the sages of Naimasharanya, they got together, 88,000 of them. They could see the age of Kali coming, and they wanted to find a solution. And after much discussion, they came to the resolution that it was best to perform a fire yagya. So for 100 years, they performed the fire yagya, thinking that this would hold back the influence of the age of Kali. And their aim was to do something good for the future residents of the age of Kali. But after 100 years of putting ghee in the fire and chanting Swaha, they realized that nothing was really happening. The only result they could see was that their faces were becoming black from the soot. So the 88,000 sages, they felt very despondent, thinking, what shall we do? What is the answer? And they were perplexed. And just at that point in time, in walked Suta Goswami. And they saw Suta Goswami, and they thought maybe he would have the answer. And expectedly, they all rushed to Suta Goswami and they asked the question, you know, this is our dilemma. We want to find a solution to the age of Kali. But we have no answer. And Suta Goswami says, I have the solution. Shukadev Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit over 7 days, and I was fortunate enough to be in that assembly. And there was great excitement after that. The 88,000, they were so excited. They offered him a seat. And they said, you know, this can be quite a pandemonium if everyone asks questions. So let's get together and we'll choose a spokesperson and we'll choose some questions to ask. So one of the questions that they were very eager to know, that this Parikshit Maharaj, how did he come to this position? And this would be discussed. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada's purport is beautiful. And there are many important points. But there are 2 points in particular in the short time we have available that I would like to focus on. Srila Prabhupada mentions that Maharaj Parikshit, being a great devotee of the Lord, he was already saved while he was in the womb of his mother. So certainly, after receiving this curse by Sringi, the son of Samika Rishi, he could have counteracted it. That was within his power. That was within his ability. But he chose not to. And Srila Prabhupada writes there, a pure devotee never asks the Lord for any undue favor. That is a very important point. Pure devotee never asks the Lord for any undue favor. We see this principle being displayed in the Srimad Bhagavatam many, many times. That is the mood of a pure devotee. The mood of the pure devotee, my goal in life, is simply to give pleasure to Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada would say, everything for Krishna, nothing for myself. Prabhupada said that was his motto in life. Everything for Krishna, nothing for myself. So the pure devotee is not looking for anything. In the seventh canto, Lord Nrisingadev, after killing Hiranyakashipu and being very pleased with Prahlad, he asks Prahlad, he says, Prahlad, please ask for a benediction. Please ask for a benediction. And what does Prahlad said? This is not good what you are asking me. A pure devotee never wants anything in return from the Lord. So please don't try to tempt me in this way because it won't work. I don't want this. But then he says something very interesting. He says, but if you want to give me a benediction, you can give me this. And what did he ask for? No. No. He says, if you want to give me a benediction, please remove from my heart whatever material desires may be there. So that's the only prayer that the devotee asks. Please take away whatever material desires may be there. Because that is the only obstacle to my pure devotional service. That's the only impediment. So this is the mood of the devotee. And even in the first canto, we see some very interesting incidents. Generally, devotees don't ask Krishna for anything. But sometimes we may see there may be a circumstance where the devotee may be under in some form of danger. And then they may ask for some protection. A few years ago, I had to do an essay for my Bhakti Vaibhava. And I did an analysis of two incidents in the first canto of two devotees. The first incident was Arjuna. Arjuna took this vow after Ashwatthama had killed his sons that he will kill Ashwatthama, otherwise he would take his own life. And then Krishna was driving his chariot and they were chasing Ashwatthama. And at one point in time, as we read in the Bhagavatam, what happened? Ashwatthama released his Brahmastra weapon towards Arjuna. And this Brahmastra was coming towards Arjuna. And there seemed to be no Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So it seemed that there was no way out for Arjuna. There was no way to counteract the Brahmastra weapon. So what was Arjuna's mood there? Did he pray to Krishna? Krishna was driving the chariot. Did he say, Krishna, please protect me from this Brahmastra weapon? What did Arjuna do in that incident? Can anyone remember? Yeah, but before that. He asked for instructions. Yes, Jagapriya Mataji. What did he ask for? It was very interesting what Arjuna did. He never asked Krishna, counteract this Brahmastra. Tell me how to counteract this Brahmastra. What he asked for, he says, Krishna, please remove any fear that may exist in my heart. Because this fear is an obstacle for me. So he said, take away this fear from my heart. And this is another prayer a devotee has, because shobha, lobha, bhaya. Lamentation, illusion, and fear, these are the three symptoms of material conditioned life. These are the three things that prevent us from total and complete surrender to Krishna. And these are the obstacles that come in our way. So Arjuna prayed, please. He didn't even ask Krishna, protect my body, protect Jesus. Please take this fear, because this fear is what prevents me from remembering you. And the goal of life is to remember Krishna. Then there's another similar incident. Uttara, the mother of Parikshit Maharaj. Krishna was sat on his chariot, all ready to depart to Dwaraka. And then Uttara comes running towards him. And what does she say? Oh my Lord, please protect me from the danger of the Brahmastra. And if one looks at that, one thinks, that Uttara is praying for protection from Krishna. But if we read the verses carefully, we see Uttara says, I don't care for my own body. But the baby in my womb, who is your devotee, you please protect the baby. So a devotee is not so worried about his own protection, but will be concerned about the protection of other devotees. So externally, it may seem sometimes that a devotee wants some favor from the Lord, but it's never like that. In the pastimes of Lord Krishna, the pastime of the killing of Denakasura, at one point in time, the coward boys, they went to Krishna and Balaram. And they said, Krishna and Balaram, we've heard that in this Talavan forest are beautiful tal fruits. Very fragrant, very sweet. We desire to eat these fruits. Can we please go to the Talavan forest? So the acharyas, they raise an interesting question. They say the devotees of the Lord, they are not interested in their own sense gratification. They are not interested in their own desires. So how come they are asking here, Krishna and Balaram, please take us to the Talavan forest so we can eat some fruit? The acharyas said they were not interested in themselves. If they said, we want these fruits for you and Krishna and Balaram, they may have, Krishna and Balaram would not have been so interested to go to the forest. So on the pretext, their real intention was, let Krishna and Balaram taste these wonderful tal fruits. So let's go to the Talavan forest. So that is the mood of a devotee. Always, never asking any undue favor from Krishna. Even Sudama Brahmana, his wife told him, we are in such a destitute condition. Krishna is living in Dwaraka, very opulent. He's your very good friend. So you can ask him for some little favor. And Sudama didn't want to do that. But thinking, it's an opportunity for me to see Krishna, to meet Krishna after such a long time, I will go. And when he went to meet Krishna, he didn't want to ask. He didn't want to ask. But Krishna knew the whole reason he had come. And he bestowed upon him. But Sudama was not really interested. So that what is pure devotional service. Not seeking anything for ourselves. When Srila Prabhupada first went to America, there was a big sign on a steel factory. Unalloyed steel. And alloy steel is some steel that's mixed with other metals. But you get unalloyed means not mixed. And Prabhupada said, they are advertising unalloyed steel, and we are advertising unalloyed bhakti. The second point, we've just got a few minutes left, I want to talk about, is the statement here about Parikshit Maharaj. He got this curse to die within 7 days. And Prabhupada says, he did not want to interfere with the current of time. But he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and very properly. So Prabhupada says, very cheerfully and very properly. So a devotee does not only see the reversals in life as something to accept and tolerate, but once he sees it cheerfully. So how can a devotee see something cheerfully? That is quite amazing, isn't it? Recently I was traveling with Mahatma Prabhu, and we were talking, and I was telling Mahatma Prabhu that one of the big lessons I learned in life, and one statement from Srila Prabhupada that really helps me, when Prabhupada says, you know, the sign of a true devotee is one who can tolerate all sorts of provoking situations in life. And I was saying, I feel that, tolerating the difficulties, that is, you know, one of the important aspects of Krishna consciousness. And then Mahatma Prabhu said, well, that is a lower stage. I was thinking, lower stage? He said, tolerating is almost like grin and bear it. You grin and you bear it, I'll tolerate it. He says, the highest stage is to accept it cheerfully. I said, oh, okay. So we do not only see our challenges in life as something to grin and bear. The highest stage is cheerfully. Oh, bring it on, bring it on. How will this help me in my Krishna consciousness? How will this bring me closer to Krishna? Oh, Krishna, you are so kind. You are doing this for me. In the sixth canto, there's this wonderful pastime between Lord Indra fighting with Vritrasura. We all know the pastime. Vritrasura was Chitraketu. He got cursed. and he accepted his curse. And he was this fierce, horrible demon. And he became part of the Asura clan. And they were fighting against the demigods. And then there's this beautiful description when the fight starts to take place. The first thing, Indra is standing on his elephant, Airavata. And he throws his club and he hits Airavata. And Airavata is knocked up and blood is coming and Indra falls down. And the demon is in a position to kill Indra, the chief of the demigods, which the demons want. And then he says, then Vritrasura looks at Indra and he says, oh, this is not good. So he does something. I think he chants some mantra or he gives some portion and he wakes up the elephant and Indra. He says, come, let's fight again. And then this fight is going on and then Indra chops off his arm. And then Vritrasura takes his trident and hurls it at Indra. And Indra's thunderbolt falls on the floor. And Indra is shocked. He's fighting his demon. He's shocked. And then he becomes depressed. He becomes depressed, you know. He doesn't want to fight anymore. And here you get this demon, Vritrasura. He says, what's wrong with you? Come on, kill me. And he speaks his beautiful verses of instruction to Indra, saying, Indra, you know, you should not become despondent. And then Indra says, it's easy for you to say. You're a devotee of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, they never become despondent. And then you see, this is the beautiful aspect of Bhagavatam. You know, in every other pastime in the Vedas, this story of Vritrasura and Indra is stated. And in every pastime in the Vedas, Indra is always the hero. But in the Bhagavatam, it's reversed. Here you have the demon telling the demigod, come on, fight. And then the demigod is praising the demon. And he says some beautiful verses, he says, you know. He says in one particular verse, he says, a person fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, of Lord Hari, the Lord of the highest auspiciousness, swims in the ocean of nectar. For him, what is the use of water in small ditches? So the devotees, they're not disturbed. And the end condition, they are cheerful. In the Mahabharata, there's the story of Subhadra and Uttara. We know that Krishna was very instrumental in making Abhimanyu into the formation. And Krishna said that Abhimanyu can come out. But what happened really is Abhimanyu was killed. So there you have a mother and a wife. The one most dearest to them has just been killed. And the person who was instrumental in advising him to do that, Krishna was standing there. What would we think? There would be some enmity. There would be some anger. The acharyas explain that not even an iota, not even a single fraction, a tiniest drop of anger or blame towards Krishna arose. Their love for him was constant, it was the same. And they just accepted it. So, the devotees of the Lord are extraordinary. They'll accept anything. And I'll just conclude maybe with this one pastime of Babrik. You all know who Babrik is? The grandson of Bhim. Yeah. Bhim and Idimbi had a son, Ghatotkach. And Ghatotkach had a son named Babrik. So Babrik, he was a very valiant hero. Very quickly, the pastime goes that Krishna wanted to know from the different warriors how long they would take for the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the battle of Kurukshetra, to be over. And different people said, Bhishma said 28 days, and Duryodhan said 24 days, and so on. But in the form of a Brahmin, he asked Babrik, the grandson of Bhim, how many days the battlefield will take. He said, in 1 minute. He said, 1 minute? He said, yes. I've got 3 arrows. And these arrows can finish everybody within 1 minute. Then Krishna said, oh, let me test this Babrik, whether he has this ability. So Krishna was standing under a peepal tree. And he says, can you tie up all of the leaves in this tree? And Babrik said, yeah. And then Krishna took one leaf and put it under his foot and hid it. So Babrik fired his arrows, and the arrows got all the leaves, and then it went above Krishna's foot and waiting. So Krishna says, what's going on? Then Babrik said, there must be some leaf under this your foot, because this arrow knows there's something there. Then Krishna said, oh, okay. And he lifted his foot and he got the last leaf and he tied it up. Then Krishna said, oh, this person is really, really powerful. So he asked Babarik, so whose side will you take? He said, I will take the weaker side's position. And the Pandavas, they've got a less stronger army, so I will take the Pandavas' position in the battle. Then Krishna says, how will that work? If you take the Pandava side, because you're on their side, and no, Babrik said, I've got 3 arrows. The first arrow will mark everyone I was going to save. The second arrow will mark anyone who I'm going to kill. And the third arrow will do the needful. Then Krishna said, but how's that going to work? If you take the Pandava side, because you're so powerful, they'll become more powerful. Then the other side will become weak. Then you have to go on the other side. And when you go on the other side, they'll become more powerful. Then there'll be an infinite regress here. So Krishna says, so you can't, there's only one thing you can do. And what is that? Sacrifice your head. So Babrik said, oh. He said, otherwise you can't. And he said, okay, fine. Cut my head off. And then Babrik himself cut his head off. And he said, only one thing I ask, I want to see what happens on the battlefield. And Krishna had his head placed there. And actually, in Rajasthan, there's a place called Katusham. You can go to this place where Babrik, you can see his head is there. But the point being, he so happily, you want my head? Yeah, take it, Krishna. Because you got your plan. So this is the wonderful qualities of a devotee. I'm gone 5 minutes over. Sorry about that. There's so much more to say, but I'll stop here. If there's any questions or comments anyone has.